is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. Armed men at polling places. Post-election violence. These are not scenes we typically associate with American democracy, but that's exactly what security officials and election monitors are warning could happen on or after November 3rd. And with President Trump continuing to cast doubt on the integrity of the election process, armed far-right groups are paying attention. We know you've been paying attention, too. What will law enforcement do to prevent voter intimidation? What can they do? That's what we're talking about today, and we have new reporting to share from Heath Druzan. Heath is a reporting fellow for the Guns in America Project at Boise State Public Radio. Heath, it's great to have you back on 1A.
Great to be here.
So you're based in Boise. Tell us more about your reporting and who you've been talking to.
Yeah, I'm based in Boise, and Idaho is kind of the center of this this anti-government universe. So I talked to a lot of these groups in general, and you know, recently I was talking to some members of the Three Percenters, and that's it's kind of a loose association of national groups. Some identify as militias, some don't. Experts certainly say that they are, and they're probably the most prominent national group of militias out there.
So you had this conversation with them, and I know you have some tape for us. Talk us into it.
Yeah, that's right. So a couple weeks ago, I went to a gathering organized by the Washington 3%. It's a very prominent militia in the country. It was under a white tent in a grassy, empty lot on Washington's Whidbey Island, about an hour north of Seattle.
Are you guys going to kneel to a tyrant?
No!
Will you stand for God?
Yes!
USA!
The clouds were low on a typically gray fall day in the Pacific Northwest. About 150 people, almost none wearing masks, gathered in violation of Washington State's pandemic health orders. The Freedom to Worship protest, as it was called, was equal parts tent revival, patriotic rally, and political event. There was a guy in a Revolutionary War costume, booths handing out political campaign stickers, and contemporary Christian music. Oh, and it was organized by one of the country's most prominent militias, the Washington 3%.
Well, I bet this is the strangest extremist rally that y'all have ever been to.
That's Washington 3% member Eric Rohde introducing the group's leader, Matt Marshall.
Matt, come on up here.
Marshall's a combat veteran and physician's assistant who prefers suits to camo. He's been trying to clean up the image of groups like his. On stage, he wore a tie adorned with the preamble to the Declaration of Independence.
I am frequently discounted as a far-right extremist.
A pistol in a leather holster poked out from underneath his blazer. Burned into it is a Thomas Jefferson quote. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants.
I also get small town redneck, leader of a militia, and various other things that are used to discredit me, my qualifications, and the 3%.
This part of the country has been a kind of breeding ground for militia groups, which have flourished in states like Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Montana. Marshall's group is part of a loose association of 3%ers around the country. Their philosophies vary, but they all say they want to defend their communities. Marshall rejects the term militia, fashioning his group as more of a community organization, albeit one that does weapons training.
Our role is to support, unite, prepare, and defend our community. Now, that does not mean we leave our communities and go into these cities and do the job of the police.
3%ers fall under the broader umbrella of the Patriot Movement, an amalgam of far-right activists, armed militias, and survivalists. And recently, there's been a lot of talk about the Boogaloo. It's a kind of internet meme turned movement of people preparing for or even trying to instigate a civil war. Despite his efforts at distancing his group from extremism, Marshall himself has nodded to some of the darker impulses of the far right. That includes posing for photos and bright Hawaiian shirts favored by Boogaloo adherents.
Let's get a little excitement. What country do we live in? Is this the USA?
Yeah.
Can I hear USA?
But the scene on Whidbey Island is subdued. No heavily armed militia members in tactical gear and camouflage, just a handful of sidearms and a few don't tread on me flags. Some of the language was less subdued, though.
You always want to allow police to do their job, but this is why we have the Second Amendment, because sometimes things fall apart.
That's Joey Gibson, another speaker at the rally. He leads the far-right group Patriot Prayer, whose members have often brawled with left-wing activists in Portland. One of his followers was shot to death during a protest there in August. And Gibson wouldn't commit to his followers staying away from the polls.
I would say everyone should watch the polls closely, right or left. The thing is too many people make this about right versus left, but we need to just not trust the people in control.
And after Election Day?
If it's obvious that Trump had won and they're trying to delay, they're trying to stop people and silence people from saying that he had won, then we're definitely going to make a lot of noise in terms of declaring that he had won.
That is exactly what a lot of experts are worried about. The potential for followers of these far-right groups to show up to the polls with guns.
I'm worried that, at least in some cases, those situations could easily escalate into violence.
That's Amy Cooter, a professor at Vanderbilt University. She studies militias and has seen some alarming chatter in the run-up to the election. She says that voter intimidation is a real threat.
Especially in places where the majority of the armed folks are white, majority of the voters or potential voters are Black, given a long history in this country of white men specifically using firearms to control Black communities and specifically to control voting as well.
And that potential may be heightened by President Donald Trump continually undermining the integrity of the election.
I'm urging my supporters to go into the polls and watch very carefully, because that's what has to happen.
That's Trump from his debate with former Vice President Joe Biden in September. He also called on the xenophobic group, the Proud Boys, to, quote, stand back and stand by, which many took as tacit support directly from the White House. Since then, some far-right leaders have explicitly called for members to show up armed to polling places, including the leader of the national militia movement, Oath Keepers. And it's already happening. Two people dressed as security guards and armed with handguns showed up at an early voting site in Florida last week. But states can crack down on these groups.
There is no authority under federal or state law for private groups of individuals to arm themselves, organize together, and project authority to direct others.
That's Mary McCord, a former federal prosecutor who leads the Institute for Constitutional Advocacy at Georgetown Law. McCord points out that every state bars private militias from acting like the military, but police rarely challenge militia gatherings, though many Black Lives Matter protesters have been tear gassed and arrested. She says law enforcement has let militias hide behind the Second Amendment.
Because the mythology about the Second Amendment is so wide and so pervasive, believing that they have a constitutional right to do this.
So McCord has sent letters to a number of cities urging leaders to enforce the laws on the books. She says she's got a mixed response, but is hopeful that even the threat of legal action may give armed activists pause. She's also published a guide for voters on how to protect their rights at polling places. And that's one thing McCord and other experts stress. Despite the concerns, they urge people to vote.
The best antidote to any type of intimidation is to come out in massive numbers, and we are already seeing that in early voting.
But the worries go long past November 3rd. Former Homeland Security official Daryl Johnson thinks far-right groups could cause unrest for a while, especially with the final election results potentially taking weeks.
It's kind of a bleak scenario. I'm an optimist by nature, but I tell you, this is just such a unique set of circumstances.
Johnson spent 25 years monitoring domestic extremism for the federal government and wrote a report in 2009 warning of the rising threat of far-right groups.
We're in a period of heightened risk right now when it comes to political violence, given the rise of these groups, the recruitment and radicalization that's been ongoing for the past 11 years at least.
The Washington rally is a good example of how these groups have become part of mainstream politics in many places. The Republican gubernatorial candidate for Washington had a booth there, and a GOP congressional candidate spoke. Patriot Movement leaders have even been running for office themselves, often with the full backing of the GOP. Given all that, Johnson says,
it doesn't matter whether a Republican or a Democrat's in power, because we're in for more of the same for the foreseeable future.
Back at the rally in Washington, there's a guy in a Revolutionary War outfit singing patriotic tunes. And revolutionary talk, with Matt Marshall referring to Washington Governor Jay Inslee as King Inslee.
The mask mandate is bad, but this tyrant has actually closed our churches.
While he distrusts Democrats and the integrity of the election, Marshall says he opposes freelance poll watching.
I hope that everybody will accept the election, whether their side wins or loses. Myself and Washington 3%, and everybody else included, needs to accept the election results.
But he sees trouble after the polls close.
I think they're going to riot and celebrate if Biden wins, or they're going to riot and be angry and block roads again if Trump is reelected. So I think it's going to come from the same side regardless.
and he sees his group stepping in.
Now, our job is not to take up a policing role, but we do have a constitutional right to defend ourselves and our families. So we'll be taking a local role, and if this spills into the suburbs, this spills into members and families and friends, communities, we will defend them, but we are not going to go out there and try to do any policing.
That's the kind of scenario many fear. Far from an endpoint, the election might just be the latest chapter in a new era of far-right mobilization.
That was Heath Druzin, Boise State Public Radio's Guns and America reporter. Guns and America's Lisa Dunn helped with research and editing for that story. Guns and America is a national collaboration between 10 public radio stations examining all aspects of firearms in America. Well, coming up, we'll get to some of your questions and concerns, including this one from Timothy on Facebook, who says, "Stop calling them militias. Just because they claim to be doesn't mean they aren't domestic terrorists." And Claire on Facebook says, "So a bunch of white guys with guns can just decide they are a militia? Doesn't the wording of the Second Amendment say a well-regulated militia, as in a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state? The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I think that would imply a legal militia needs to be one organized by a state or federal government, not a bunch of angry people." And Susan on Facebook says, "Guns at polling places are there to intimidate and cause workers and voters to be afraid." Also coming up, as these groups gear up for Election Day, are state and local governments prepared to face them? That's all ahead. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or maybe perfect strangers? You can get all the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
On the next episode of Louder Than a Riot, the 20-year fight to clear the name of former No Limit rapper Mac Phipps.
Because me and my brother was close. The years that he lost, that's some of the best years of his life he done lost. For me, it just hurts.
Listen now to Louder Than a Riot, the new podcast from NPR Music.
I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're talking about the increased threat of self-styled armed militias during the election. We just heard a report from Heath Druzin, Boise State Public Radio's Guns in America reporter, and we're going to hear more from him now. Now, Heath, we just heard you at a rally with the Washington 3%er, 3%ers. How many other groups are there with similar stances?
These numbers are a little hard to pin down, but there's by the Southern Poverty Law Center estimate, just under 200 militia groups out there across the country. And then when you add in all of the sort of patriot movement, far right, anti-government groups, the number gets well above 500. So there's quite a few groups, and they're spread all across the country.
And how are we seeing these groups become more part of the mainstream?
Well, you know, what you're seeing in certain states, especially like here in Idaho, is that they're getting support from mainstream parties. Most often the Republican Party, as these groups tend to skew right. But you're seeing politicians openly embrace them. We have a lieutenant governor here, Janice McGeehan, who's posed with members of the 3%. She's campaigned on the behalf of one of the leaders who's running for state senate here. And that's kind of indicative of what's happening in some other states, too. You have a number of these leaders who have been running for office. They've been getting more involved in politics, which is sort of a departure. You saw earlier in the militia movement a kind of rejection of government completely, whereas now you have some more politically savvy leaders who are kind of almost acting as lobbyists in state houses. You'll see them kind of bending the ear of legislators in the halls here in Boise. You had one prominent far-right leader who won a seat in Washington State, Matt Shea, who has become kind of infamous for his support of what some would say are pretty extreme views. So they're really becoming part of politics, even while holding some pretty anti-government views.
I want to return to this comment from Timothy on Facebook, who said, "Stop calling them militias. Just because they claim to be doesn't mean they aren't domestic terrorists." Can you give us a working definition of militia? Because the FBI is also calling them militias, but that's not a legal definition, correct?
Right. And so it's a very interesting comment because I get I get a lot of criticism both from the left and the far right. Some folks who don't like militias think that it legitimizes them. But then there's a lot of militia leaders, like Matt Marshall himself in that story, who think that calling them a militia actually makes them seem like extremists. So the definition of militia kind of depends on who you talk to. But in my view, it's a group of people who do weapons training, who do training for a potential conflict, often with the either explicit or implicit idea that if a tyrannical government comes down on the people, that they are there to defend against a tyrannical government. And of course, they often go back to the Revolutionary War and kind of fashion themselves as inheritors of that tradition of standing up to the tyrannical British government.
But how does that intersect with the legality of these groups?
Right, and that's murky. As Mary McCord at Georgetown Law points out, you know, every state does have laws that prevent groups from acting like the military. So these are anti-militia laws. I think where you might find some disagreement or maybe some confusion is what constitutes acting like the military. I don't have an answer for that. I am not a legal scholar. Obviously, these groups would say that they are just exercising their Second Amendment and First Amendment rights. Mary McCord and some other legal experts would say that they are clearly violating these state laws and that the states just aren't bothering to enforce their own laws. And I think we're likely to see that come to a head in the months and years to come.
So talk us through some of the different scenarios people are most concerned about with regard to these groups.
Well, most immediately, people are worried about people showing up to the polls armed and that kind of show of force, intimidating people and you know, in the worst case scenario, scaring them away from voting. That's a real concern that a lot of folks have. And certainly, you know, this country has a history of armed intimidation, especially of people of color. And I think that's a particular concern in communities where the majority of voters might be people of color. So that's the most immediate concern, but there's a more long-term concern that because this election is so contentious, and because there's a really good chance that the returns are not going to be finalized on election day, and it could drag out maybe even for weeks, that's going to kind of create an opening for these groups to step in and maybe claim voter fraud, and perhaps even cause violence or have clashes with groups on the left.
Oh, we got a voicemail from someone who's concerned about militia activity where they live.
Hi, my name's Peggy. I live near Carson City, Nevada, northern Nevada, and we definitely have militia activity in our area, most recently seen in a Black Lives Matter counter-protest in Minden, Nevada, where hundreds of armed people showed up to intimidate a small group of local Black Lives Matter protesters. The fact that we may have to deal with armed poll watchers, quote unquote, at this election is absolutely astonishing and terrifying to me. I feel like this election is taking place in Afghanistan, not the United States. This is not the exercise of the Second Amendment when you are doing it pointedly to try to intimidate and deter people from participating in the democratic process. Never thought I would see anything like this in my lifetime. I early voted and dropped off.
Peggy, thanks for that message. Well, Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson banned the open carry of guns at polling places, but that ban was then overturned by the Michigan Court of Claims. Do we see similar movements in other states, a push for, you know, stopping people from openly carrying guns at polling places?
So I think this is a sphere that a lot of law enforcement officials struggle with. I spoke, one of the callers was from Nevada, and I had spoken to the Nevada AG who was promising to crack down on any voter intimidation. But also understanding that the Second Amendment and the First Amendment makes it a little bit tricky. What is the line between somebody just openly carrying in a state where you're allowed to openly carry and actually intimidating voters? So I think that's something that is going to be state by state, and I think it is potentially a tricky situation that's going to give local law enforcement some headaches.
Well, we got this comment from Pat on Facebook who says, besides the regular militia guys, Ammon Bundy, et cetera, Idaho has state legislatures, county sheriffs, and a lieutenant governor that are either militia members or sympathizers. Heath, you're in Idaho. What have you found around this question of law enforcement sympathy?
Well, what the listener says is correct. There are certainly a lot of sympathizers in the government, and there's at least one 3% member who is in the legislature. And we've certainly had a lot of legislators who went out to Ammon Bundy's standoff in Oregon in 2016. As far as law enforcement sympathies, there's some truth to that, too. We have some so-called constitutional sheriffs. And these are sheriffs whose views really do align with the Patriot movement and often align with some of these militia groups where they kind of see themselves as almost a sovereign authority and certainly not, not answerable to the federal government and often not answerable even to the governor. So, yes, there is truth to that. I don't know how widespread it is in local law enforcement here, but certainly law enforcement has been kind of loath to step in and take any action against these groups. And, I think that might be a mix of believing that they're protected by the Second Amendment and perhaps, just not seeing some of the showdowns that have happened, like in Oregon in 2016 with that standoff at the wildlife refuge and maybe not wanting to wade into that.
We're talking with Heath Druzin, Boise State Public Radio's Guns in America reporter. And after a quick break, we'll bring a couple more voices into the conversation. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from The Land I Trust, a podcast from the Sierra Club featuring people sharing their experiences with climate and justice issues. This season brings unique stories of energy transition and community transformation amidst the growing movement for environmental, racial, and climate justice. Listen to season 4 of The Land I Trust on sc.org/stories, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Voting is crucial, and I don't give a damn how you look at it.
Is this America?
It was we, the people.
The land of the free and the home of the brave.
Not we, the white male citizens.
Misrepresentative Democracy.
A new series about voting in America from NPR's Throughline.
Listen now.
This is 1A, and we're talking about how to deal with members of self-styled militias during this election season. With us is Guns in America reporter Heath Druzin. And a quick correction, QAnon is not a left-leaning group. It's actually a right-leaning conspiracy theory, and Black Lives Matter is a group focused on issues of justice for Black people. Well, I want to bring another voice into the conversation. Charles Marino is a former advisor for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and CEO of Sentinel Security Solutions. Charles, thanks for being here.
Sure. Thank you.
So as someone who works in security, how big of a concern are these groups for you during and after the election?
Yeah, it's certainly a concern, as described before, for all the reasons just mentioned in terms of possible voter disruption, deterrence. And so what we're concerned about and what I'm focusing on right now is the election as a flashpoint, right? Basically bringing two sides together in a situation where there's different beliefs, different ideologies, and it leads to violence in the streets. So as it relates to the militias, as described, anytime you have a portion of the population that believes that they may need to militarize themselves, which is essentially what militias are, it's troublesome because there's more structure within these organizations in terms of identified leadership at the local, national levels, there's also no clear indicators as to the decision-making of when in their minds, since they are overly anti-government, when the government has in fact overreached. If we look at the high-risk states like Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Oregon, where there is a high level of militia activity, there's a consistent theme there, on top of them being swing states, with the exception of one. These were states that implemented very strict COVID restrictions, which we saw play out in Michigan with the attempted kidnapping of the governor, and which could have led to her murder. It was determined by the local militia there, the Wolverine Watchmen, that there was in fact an overreach of government. And that's the wild card here. So what's the activation point of these militias, and how exactly does it play out in varying forms? Some militias are more bark than bite. However, they do exist, and they still are being paid attention to by intelligence and law enforcement. However, what we've seen now is we've seen a lot more activity with the militias since they have become more politically aligned, and then tie that with anti-government sentiment. And that's where our big problem lies. How does that play out?
Well, one of the five states most at risk of heightened militia activity during the election is Wisconsin. And we're joined now by Josh Call. He's Wisconsin's attorney general and a Democrat. Attorney General, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So how do you balance First and Second Amendment rights with preventing intimidation? Where is the line, and how will you make sure it's enforced? Because it seems much easier said than done.
Yeah, those are obviously both constitutional protections, but the law is very clear that states are able to take steps to protect people's fundamental right to vote. And having, for example, gun-free school zones is one of the ways that we protect people's safety. Well, some polling places are in schools, and because the voting is taking place there, firearms aren't allowed. Likewise, if somebody has a firearm that they're using to somehow intimidate or threaten any voters, they have crossed the line, and then they're infringing on the rights of that voter. And so enforcement activity for voter intimidation is appropriate.
Charles, what's preventing a larger national focus on these groups?
Well, one thing that we haven't seen is the outright kind of speaking to these groups from national political leaders beyond the local level to basically remind these groups of the peaceful transition of power that's occurs over all these years within the country. And also just remind them that, you know, as far as the militia groups go, where those certain militias think they are in fact an extension of law enforcement, that their assistance is not needed and may actually be counterproductive. As far as the attention that these groups are being given at the federal level, as it relates to domestic terrorism and potential acts of terrorism, these groups are being paid attention to. It's the local level where, you know, law enforcement, you will hear there's some confusion regarding First and Second Amendment rights of these groups, semantics with what they're calling themselves, not militias, but community organizations. And so these law enforcement departments actually feel like they're in a little bit of a catch-22, because if they do take action, their departments and the local government may be open to some form of civil liability. So the attention is being given from an intelligence perspective to these groups, but it's actually that back to that freedom of operation within the communities, be it from, you know, law enforcement relationships, the ability to hold recruitment events uninterrupted, and large gatherings while armed.
Heath, is that part of what you're seeing at play in Idaho?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've got, he mentioned the, you know, groups kind of using semantics, and certainly, you know, our most prominent group here is the Real 3%ers of Idaho, part of that loose association of national groups I talked about. And they also reject the term militia and say that they're a community organization. And, you know, they do things like they do food giveaways and things like that, and kind of distance themselves from the more extreme image that some militias do have. And, Yeah, I do think there's some hand-wringing among local law enforcement and local leaders of what to do or even what to say. You really don't have a lot of them speaking out. There are certainly exceptions. There's a mayor up north in Sandpoint, Idaho, who's spoken pretty strongly against these groups. But I don't think there's a real firm conviction of how to approach these groups, and I think it just muddies the waters even more when you have a lot of elected officials who openly embrace them.
Attorney General Call, talk about some of the conversations your department has been having with the Department of Justice about what to do if there are issues with these groups during and after the election.
Well, we've been in contact with a variety of different agencies, including our governor's office, which oversees the National Guard. But it's critical that we make sure that if there is, you know, activity in response to the election results or as votes are being counted, that that activity remain peaceful. But to the extent that people want to exercise their peaceful protest rights, that's absolutely their right. But once things cross the line into violence or destruction or an effort to interfere with the vote counting process, at that point, the activity becomes criminal and there will be an appropriate law enforcement response. But it's also really important that we have a clear message sent from our federal government that this is unacceptable. You know, there was reporting recently indicating that DHS's political leadership was blocking the release of information identifying the white supremacist threat as the most significant domestic terror threat. And having a clear message from the Justice Department, from the Department of Homeland Security, that any activity to interfere with the elections or to engage in violence or destruction after the elections is a federal crime and won't be tolerated, and that those laws will be enforced.
How much have you been communicating with other states about this issue?
We've been in touch with a number of other state attorneys general. There are some similar issues that arise in different states. And one of the things that I think you've been seeing from a lot of AGs is communicating about the fact that voter intimidation is a crime. It's something we take seriously. And if people engage in that crime, they should be prepared to spend time behind bars. We recently put out a multi-state statement with a bipartisan group of AGs, which included a strong majority of AGs, reinforcing the principle that every lawfully cast ballot needs to be counted. And we're going to continue working together to make sure that this is a free and fair election.
So, Heath, we've just got a few seconds here. What will you be watching in Idaho?
You know, I'm going to be watching to see what these groups are kind of planning to the run up to the election, and looking at the chat boards and just kind of seeing what their view is on how the election is going, and certainly any chatter about thinking things are unfair or perhaps, talking about alleged voter fraud, things like that.
Well, we'll keep unpacking the many questions around these groups. That was Heath Druzin, a Guns in America reporter at Boise State Public Radio, part of a national collaboration between 10 public radio stations examining all aspects of firearms in America. Also with us, Charles Marino, a former advisor for the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and CEO of Sentinel Security Solutions, and Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call, a Democrat. Thanks to you all for joining us. Remember, we're on Instagram. You can follow us at The 1A Show. This conversation was produced by Katie Klein and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks so much for listening, and let's talk again on Monday. This is 1A.